Hi, Olympio. Welcome back.
Hello, Adam. Good to be back.
And you survived the Java Advent.
Yes. More white hair, but all good.
Yeah, there was a Java Advent 2026. And how was it? So what Java Advent is, this is like you have for one day, there is a Duke window, and behind the door, there is an article about Java, right?
Yes. Just an asterisk to your mention. It's 2025. We are not predicting the future just yet. So it's
Java 2025.
It was interesting. As expected, it has a lot of AI, a lot of topics related to AI, but it was a bit more coherent than the previous years. So you can see a stream of towards the right direction. Different points of view. For instance, one article that I found quite interesting was the article by Simon Martinelli. So he wrote about specification-driven development, and I felt like in university years when everybody was selling UML as the lingua franca, and then you can generate everything. So somehow I feel a circle closing there, and I was just curious to see how much can I be on top of that. Then there were a couple of other points related to how the new versions of Java are helping with more speed on the AI side, because for a long period of time, everybody said, okay, Python is the language to go for machine learning. But as more and more AI-based applications are moving out of the POC phase, they are going more operational. People are realizing that we need a more mature ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And when you're not needing that much in terms of inference, you're discussing more about the other way around. We're not talking about training, but we are discussing more about inference. You need more mature ecosystems, and then Java comes in the right position. And obviously, then there were the classical ones that are looking into what happened.
But just on that note, what I found in enterprises is that people confuse machine learning with inference and LLMs. So usually they assume you need Python for AI workloads. And I think you could do this with Java as well. There are frameworks where you can do machine learning with Java. But the truth is, in order to make machine learning, Python is easier because the tooling is there. And because it's a scripting language, you can have Jupyter notebooks or whatever. Yeah. And you can easily, you know, have some calculations and apply some functions, and you see immediately result for experimentation. But it's really hard to pick the Jupyter notebook and put it in production. I mean, hard is impossible. And Python is kind of right now multi-threaded, but not really. And Java is very fast. And by the way, Python is not fast. What Python just does, it has good integration with native code, which Java has as well. So there's actually no difference. And Python is orders of magnitude slower than Java. So in order to have enterprise inference, I don't see Python at all. So I don't even understand how Python could help you to have inference in enterprise. You have a local model, right? Remote model is, you don't need Python at all, because what you need is HTTP client. So this is, and the API is very simple. So Python is absolutely pointless. To have, pointless. You can do this, like you could use curl, you can use Python, or you can use HTTP client in Java and 10 lines of code. So it doesn't matter which language you are using. So this is this way around. And to run models locally, you can achieve a lot with Tornado VM and frameworks like that. They accelerate, and it is getting better and better and better. And Python just cannot do that. So what Python can do, they can integrate better with NVIDIA drivers or something like this, right?
Yeah, definitely. But I think what we usually do, we are just missing the point where Python came from. And what I feel, and I remember one presentation of a long time ago, and that was in line with what I was saying, is that we are like football fans. We are cheering for our programming language without even thinking and taking a step back. And if you look at Python's history, it was used in academia. I met a lot of people that were coming from biology and other sciences and that they were using for models and all kind of just plain games Python, because it was easy to grasp, it was easy and so on and so forth. And that's what it built. And if you look at the machine learning space, well, AI, as now we like to call it broadly, a lot of the people from academia came. And obviously they used the thing that was easier for them. And then things built. But now it was such a huge speed, you know, from moving from academia to production. And now it's about the time where you just think about what's the proper way moving forward and not think about only that. And now it's just while listening to what I'm saying is that it's the same thing with code generation now. It's a huge challenge. And if not long ago, people were still building, well, not long ago, a long time ago, a couple of decades ago, but still, if you look at the global scale, it's not long ago for in the 70s when you still had to build assembly and stuff like that. And now my feeling is that we should move away at some point from high-level languages, because what's the point? You generate the code, you just drop it in production, and then you move to the, and then that's getting compiled and so on and so forth. And probably something will happen in the meantime, or that's my expectation, but people are that frantic about building stuff, dropping it in production without thinking about the outcomes, that we are just jumping over a couple of stages. So, and that's what I'm also trying to do with my colleagues. Back in the day, you used to say that don't optimize prematurely in terms of code. Just wait, see how it behaves, and do it. Now I'm having the same discussion with my colleagues, but now I'm talking about not putting too much effort into having very neatly done code when you want to see what's the outcome. What's the outcome? What are the clients saying? And people are very hiding behind best practices is not useful. But well, at this point, I have a couple of...
Okay. Then two points. First, one, you said like cheerleaders or of a language, huh? This is what you said, right? So if you start with Java, you like to stick with Java or with Python or something like this, right? This was the first statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. What you said exactly is like cheerleader of a language, right? Something like this?
Like football fans.
Football fans.
Yes.
Yeah. And there is something to it, but in my case, a bit different because as I started Java, there was a huge push to Java. This is not like I tried to propagate Java. I was a little bit skeptical, but everyone wanted to have Java. You know, this is like, we need Java, Java. And there was Java was everywhere. And now there is there in my clients. And then we improved, we iterated on it. And now from my perspective, if Java is good enough, it would be dishonest to my clients to say, now we can do something different just to be different. You know what I mean? The ecosystem is there. And if we can iterate on it and improve the world without causing too much trouble, we should do this. And because everything is Java, so I stick with Java and enjoy that. It's not like, you know, I think Java is the best language on the world. Obviously it is, but not like seriously in thinking. But the point is, now we have Java, it is works in production. So instead of, you know, destroying everything and replacing that with a language which could work is maybe a little bit nicer, I rather optimize what's there, make it a little bit nicer, and my clients are thankful. So this is maybe the story. And I like Java, of course, but this is also a reason behind, because what I really hate to promise something and say next year, no, it's different. Forget it, you know? So this is like, I think... as a consultant, you should at least, you know, see, okay, you can tell the client what could happen. It's like, hey, client, look, we can go this direction and this direction. If you go this direction, this is the likely outcome. And if it is, just stick to it, you know? Why you should change directions too many times? So this was the first idea.
I agree with you. But for me, Java is more than just a language. And it's about the ecosystem as well. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you have multiple other choices. So for instance, at the point when a couple of years already back, I needed to write some code. And I wanted to try something else. I went with Kotlin. Mm-hmm. Because a long time ago I tried it. I was curious to see how things evolved, mm-hmm. and I didn't feel a need. And it was still okay for me because I had the standard library and all the things that I knew. Mm-hmm. And there were all the libraries, the open source libraries, again, I can use. But something new that it still challenges you in terms of building. This was before virtual threads and all the things that came to Java. And I think that's important. And also on top of that.
And then no question to you back then.
Go ahead.
Was it really a could you use the virtual threads in the Python way intensively back then? So was it like with Kotlin you could deliver unique features and with Java you couldn't? This is the interesting part.
Well, I don't really think so, but it was the the syntactic sugar. I remember the point.
So if you enjoy it, go for it, But my project, they say, we have to use Kotlin and Node.js because it's like, well, okay, if you like to play with it, go with it, but don't justify that with some needs which don't exist, So, I agree with you, but if you consider the entire ecosystem, it's even worse because with MicroProfile and Jakarta and whatever, it's still working, it is boring, but it works, This is like Linux. We could, of course, Linux is a bad example because it is stable and everyone loves Linux. But maybe we will find another operating system than Linux, which is more exciting, But why, if it already works? So this is like, and for me, the standard libraries in Java is like Linux. So it's not like I'm completely excited to use another time, at inject. But if it works, why I should, instead of use at inject, add something else, right? So this is the question. And regarding the code quality, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can just know what is boring, we learn it, forget it. And now on top of that, we can build something exciting and focus on that instead, rebuilding the infrastructure all the time. So this is the, which is boring to me, just to replace CDI with another dependency injection, just to be different. And regarding the code quality, so this was interesting. I delivered a talk. I don't know whether you had a chance to see this, a JFocus, like high-speed Java. And what I code generation and best practices. This is actually perfect conversation with you. Because one of my clients asked me last year in summer, what about best practices and LLMs? Do we need best practices? This is exactly a similar conversation to here. And I thought about this and I say, okay, look, what's interesting is that actually Java is in the unique position that whatever we talk about yet and now about, MicroProfile, Jakarta, JEPs, JSRs, whatever happened in the last 25 years was open source, openly available. So you could download PDFs, the HTMLs like that, and openly crawlable. That's the point. Plus, there was always a separation between API and SPI. So we had application programmer interface. This was like JDBC. And we had SPI service provider interface, which was DB2, Oracle, H2, and Derby and whatever, and Postgres and MySQL. And the same was true for servlets. There was a servlet API, and there was Tomcat, Jetty, WebSphere, and so forth, and BA WebLogic. And the cool story is, what I'm doing right now is, I'm pointing the LLMs to the API, and I'm not allowing them to consider SPI. And the first effect is zero hallucinations. Because all the old specs, they were written in normative way, so really clean, Nishal must know, and so forth. And LLMs love it. So that's the first part. And then even in Cluj, I used the old Zuika distillery example over and over again because there's no NDAs. I implemented it on stage and there was a half a night. So there were some classes. And even this was created in structured way. There was one package per feature. So there was distillery and liquor and stuff like that. I still use it. The same structure in all my projects with BCE, Boundary Control Entity, which is even older than Java, 1992. So I just was curious how old it is, and this was way older than Java. And LLMs know it even better. This is the point. And now it comes. if you do this, you can have a prompt like create Zuika BC. All. Three words. And you get perfect code right away. Because LLMs know exactly what I mean. Because they were trained on the publicly available information. And now it comes to the quality. So what I try to do right now is to write better code than ever before with LLMs. And the idea is, instead of have rules, steerings, and everything, you can have the entire information encoded in Java, because this is not a lot, a semantics. So we have package info annotations and stuff like that. So if you would read the code, it is beautiful, because there's almost no infrastructure, lots of business logic, semantic, and LLMs love it as well. All LLMs, this is the cool. I switch between them, they don't care, because it seems like all LLMs were trained on the same specs. So, and now it comes. All my clients ask the first question, as is in all workshops. How well does your approach work with large projects? And the cool story is, it works perfectly. Because with my structure, like, you know, Zuika, Distillery, and Dracula, whatever, as features, every package is self-contained, almost self-contained. This is the best case, maximal cohesion, minimal coupling. It means I observe the LLMs, how they work. They only look in one package, regardless how big the project is. So, I mean, with Java right now, in my projects, we are in the unique position. We can generate the best code ever fast, and it scales like crazy. So there were no limits so far. So I would say, and if I tried the opposite approach, just for fun. So I say, don't write packages, do whatever you like. And if the project becomes a little bit larger, you get hallucinations like crazy because the LLMs don't know what they are doing. So I think what you have to do is you should have steerings, guidelines or whatever to provide structure to LLMs and then can let them go. This is true. But if you don't do this, it won't work. I was also curious and did some Swift UI and Swift work just for fun, you know. Fired up Xcode and it hallucinates way more the same model than Java. Also, it was Apple ecosystem. So there were the APIs, Xcode. I said, you know, use the idiomatic Apple way. I don't care. And the first iteration was already a hallucination to try to invoke method which doesn't exist. Never happened to me in the Java world so far. So never try to invent a CDI annotation or never try to invent a JAX-RES annotation, right? So what I have to say is Java right now is the best language, is my observation, and I challenged this multiple times in conferences for LLM generation. And I'm not aware of any other platform with strict separation between API and SPI, so clearly defined. And there's Tencent study, and what they find out that Java is like, you know, in the 80% quality of code generation by LLMs, and Python, JavaScript are 60%. So I would say for enterprises, golden time. So interestingly, I made the opposite observation to you, and right now we are using these observation projects. And my client are thankful again because we can reuse the old code and tweak it a bit with semantics, and it scales like crazy with LLMs, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not using day-to-day Java, but yes, I can understand why, because in the end, that was the way how it was taught. You have the clear definition, you get to the point where the JSR has an API, and then you just let it go in terms of implementation, and that's how it worked for years now. So
yeah, exactly.
It's clear, and then it's quite obvious, and also the structure and everything, how it's put, it's easy to parse because it's really methodical how you can do it. And it, as you said, the quality is ingrained into that. And on top of it, looking back at I think the information is already 1 or 2 years old, the open source supply chain studies done by Sonar, not Sonar, but Sonatype, and they were just mentioning pretty much the same thing. The level of quality, also infrastructure-wise, build-wise, that you can find in the open source projects from Java. Because everybody had proper tests and so on and so forth that allowed a higher level in terms of maintenance than all other compared languages. And I'll not name, you know, not to
pick on them. Sure.
Yeah.
No, but this is interesting, and I found it once again in completely different ecosystem front ends. I stolen the approach from Java, and I'm applying right now to front ends, and do the same with web components. Exactly the same. I say, look, LLM, you are only allowed to use standards from MDN, Mozilla Developer Network, and use custom elements. Exactly the same great results. And the cool story is, if I do this way, I get perfect code without any external dependencies. I don't need builds. I don't need frameworks. It just generates, you know, idiomatic code, which is crazy fast. Custom elements is the fastest on Earth and runs in all browsers per default. So it seems like what can happen with LLMs, that standards become more important because you don't have to describe the standards. LLMs know the standards already. And you just apply, use, you know, syntactic sugar around the standards, a view, you know, don't generate too many tests or whatever, and let it go. So for me, it's not right now the best time ever. I get so many requests regarding, you know, the old projects, and my clients cannot believe the quality. Actually, what I love to do is just, you know, go to stage and just fire up the IDE and generate some code. I tried once at Java user group, and they couldn't believe that it's like there's a trick what you're doing. You know, I mean, what you did, why it works this way? It's like, yeah, because they know it. What if I tell them create a business component, they know what it means because it's BCE. If I tell, and what's also cool, I had a public blog, like 2000 articles. They were also open, and they also read the article, because sometimes I get, you know, links from myself, which is cool. So I would say standards is actually the best trick ever with LLMs. Because, and another thing, another selling point to that is, Olympio, is context saving. The cool story is, with the BCEs, with the structure with components and standards, my prompts are short. It means we don't have any problems with context. And the smaller the context, the cheaper inference gets. So we actually use standards right now in big enterprise project to save inference money. Because without these standards, we will have to explain a lot what to do, but we don't have to, you know? So this is actually, I don't know, maybe an overlooked Java feature. Because if I showed this, and even in JFocus at the talk, afterwards people came to me and say, hey, this is crazy. It's like, yeah, but I mean, it's obvious, right? Because LLMs were, companies were data hungry during the training phase. And Java was always perfectly specified. There was specifications, and they were publicly available, interestingly, for different reasons. So they had really good specifications in order to be vendor neutral, right? The idea was that we can replace BA with IBM. But the vendor neutrality also means that the LLM, if it was trained on the spec, it doesn't care about the variations. And variations means hallucinations, right? Because this is where the trouble starts.
I cannot contradict you because I saw also
your presentation. You don't have to, but this is, I just was just, you triggered something. You say this is okay. This is actually an interesting point because, you don't have to contradict. So it's just like, no.
No, what I want to say is that also I saw last year your presentation while in Cluj with BMW, and it was surprisingly good quality and all. So it's also easy to read, because in the end that's I think that's the transition phase where you have calling classical developers nowadays, we have to find a term for them, for old school developers that pushed for a long period of time for best practices and how the things are working, and now out of the sudden they have to shift the mindset, and then the code that you provided was like good for both both worlds. Mm-hmm.
And now it is even got even better, because what I showed in Cluj was last year, there were skills not available. Right now, you have a standardized way to provide your diffs. And the skills I provided are leaner and leaner. So in Cluj, what I had was like 300 lines of rules, maybe, and now they are maybe 50, because I deleted more and more, and it still works. So it's actually, it got even better than what I showed in Cluj. It was the very beginning of that. By the way, it was actually a cool event. And how the Java user group is going? There was some additional meetups since then in Cluj?
Yeah, I think we had two or three. We have one this month, cool. But by the 25th. And what it's I'm happy for is the ecosystem matured a bit. So we have also people coming from inside the companies in Cluj coming with interesting topics. So I think that's good. Still working with for a couple of other ones this year. So
was it well attended?
Well, yeah, it was decent. I think we're a bit under the one that you were here with Jonathan, but there are still 40 to 50 people.
Yeah, this is actually for Java user group is perfect.
It's perfect. It's low under what we used to have 10 years ago, where we had like 100 to 200
people.
Yeah,
but you had a break. You know, you have to promote it, and it will come back. So
yeah, I know. So it's quite good, and yeah, we're moving forward, and hopefully we'll build on top of it.
Very good. So this was the standards, and also in web components, which I find surprising how well it works. And if you're interested, it's AI Rails. I actually AI Rails .dev. So I promised in Cluj I will publish it, and it happened 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, something like this. Because it took a long time. Because what happened was, back then in Cluj there was just a proprietary Claude MD what I had, and agents happened. And then skills happened, and skills are available in Copilot everywhere. So now with that is a standard. So you can use it. You can use it in all agents. And back then, I mean, the only reasonable was Claude. Actually, the codecs from ChatGPT was not that good, and Copilot had only proprietary stuff. But now now it's time. It's okay. It's just mature enough, and do it. But I actually interrupted you. I intercepted. We had the excursion to Java from Python, and you said I actually wanted to talk about Java Advent because this is actually a cool topic. So what else? So we skipped I interrupted you with the with Java and inference, and what else? What do you like, or what was the trend in Java Advent articles this year?
Well, it's pretty much it's in line with what you mentioned, AI. And then standards and what you have, because there are a lot of things, you know, you have these people that are looking for the gems into their libraries. For instance, there are the guys from Eclipse Collections that have a tendency of having each year an article and what things are new in Eclipse Collections. Cool. Discontinued. And I think that's one of the important things in Java, because at some point there's writing something in JavaScript or TypeScript, doesn't really matter, in that ecosystem. And I was looking for a proper collection, a proper implementation of a hash map. And it was surprising how naive it was and how it was missing a lot of things. Then there was a couple of points about about WebAssembly. You know, we have... you mentioned Tornado virtual machine earlier, and I think this edition, Eduardo Vacchi, which is one of the implementers for Tornado VM, had another iteration of his view on what WebAssembly and how Tornado helps with having things a lot faster. We had Andrea Perufo from IBM, I suppose now, because things moved there from Red Hat to IBM, about chicory and the first, how he used to say about it, box in box, so WebAssembly for Java. And I think chicory is now at 1.2 in terms of version, so it's already have a major release there, and a lot of other, pretty much a lot of other things. For instance, we have Kay Holtzman, which again is a long-standing elf of the Java Advent, and he was discussing about patterns in pattern matching, and which are some nice to have cases and some other that you wouldn't like to have. I think Artur, I'm pretty sure that Artur Skirovsky, he has a newsletter as well on the Java ecosystem. Mm-hmm. He had two articles.
And great, his newsletter looks really professional. He's like, this is great work.
Yeah, and obviously Quarkus had a lot of covering, like usual. We spoke about Rook a lot, about the new static website generator from that is built on top of Quarkus. And as always, in the last couple of years, another Java geek from Bayern opened the calendar, Markus Eisele.
He always opens the calendar?
Up to now, yes. So it's a tradition that we kept it for a couple of years now. In the first period, I think 12 years ago, or for a couple of editions, Markus was opening it with very interesting things and what's optimistic. And then we had Martijn Werburg. Now he's with Microsoft. He was closing it, and he was having a more gloomy opinion on what are the things. But for a long period of time, I didn't get a chance to discuss with Martijn, so probably it's a tradition that we have to reinstate or find somebody else to do it. So a lot of things. My intention was, but unfortunately the time flew too quickly, to have a couple of word clouds to see exactly what are the topics, because like always, we leave the people choose the things that are important for them. And I was thinking about making an important prediction and also make a summary for Fuji, because we like the what Fuji is doing also on this front. So I was just thinking to make a summary, I don't know, from the 24 articles to have 8 articles that are just referring to a couple of the points, but still in the making.
Uh-huh. So I took a look. It looks really good. And the first was Quarkus, there was one Spring Boot. So, and it looks nice. So it's great work. And you are not doing Java anymore? You said, what are you, a manager or PowerPoint artist?
A bit of everything. So currently I'm working for a company that is doing IoT. And hence-wise, it's more embedded. And for the server side, there is a lot of PHP for what we need. So,
it out with the PHP, or can it remain in the podcast?
You can just say that it's a hallucination. So,
hallucination. Okay.
Yeah, and one other thing that I think it's very important to push to point out is not the article is written by James Hamilton. James, he was usually working on the low-level things in terms of optimization and stuff like that, mechanical sympathy and all the crazy things that some people are able to do. And this year he was discussing about LLVM edition. So he wanted to see how he can generate stuff from Java in this space. So I really enjoyed the article. I cannot reproduce many things of it because there are already a couple of months back and it's a little bit too much for me as I was in that space. But James has a couple of articles from 2022 ongoing, all on great topics.
Mm-hmm. You read all the articles?
Yeah, most of them.
Uh-huh, cool. So you're enjoying the process as well?
Well, if I wouldn't enjoy it, I would have stopped it a long time ago. So,
okay, and how this works? The authors has to somehow send you a CFP.
We have a small CFP in September where people are just proposing articles, and after that, we try to have articles put in place by mid-November, so we are able to publish them as we want. But given that throughout the years there are that many people that recurrently came back, it became a tradition. So at points I'm just tapping people on the shoulder, for instance Markus or Nicola Frankel, which we know for a long period of time, or James Hamilton or Steve Poole, to name just a couple. Okay, what's interesting for you? Because people are just keeping a couple of topics on the shelf. And then, okay, for the winter holiday, this is the thing that I want to work on. So it's a mixture. We try to keep a mixture of new blood and veterans of the advent calendar to just bring these things together.
And you get many requests?
Decent amounts. we try to, at the point where we see that it's full, I tend to stop it, because there are, for instance, one article that was quite interesting. I don't remember, unfortunately, I don't remember exactly the name now. But there was a guy that said that he started with the advent calendar because he always wanted to write, but he didn't get the courage. And after he managed to have the first article out, he started his own blog.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's why I have a tendency of keeping just a couple of spares in case something happens, but to not go back and say, okay, we have too many requests, blah, blah, blah. You know, well, actually you don't know, but some people that submit in conferences, some might get some refusal. So that's why I'm trying to avoid these kind of things, to just make sure that everybody has a place so that we can get of the voice of the community. For instance, one that I liked a lot this year was a guy that was still a student. And it was nice because he was very thorough into what he put out. He just felt that it's very important. So then that's why at one point, I think we had a bit over 30 requests. I stopped, and then the topics that we saw that are in the same area, we just merged so that we have a chance for everybody in the end.
Uh-huh. What was the most surprising article? Or request, maybe even. Not doesn't have to be an article.
Well, it was one a couple of years back. This year it was everything was linear, but it was one a couple of years back about best practices in Python. So,
Are there any?
It was a very short article.
Okay. Okay. Was it published, actually?
I don't think so. I don't remember.
Yeah, because it's Java Advanced. But what you might like is there is a podcast episode 381 of AirHacks FM about Industry 4.0, because you mentioned IoT. And there is a German startup. And their guest was Christopher Dutz. What it does is PLC in Java, and also provide everything is open source. So he's a true open source guy. Maybe you can invite him to your podcast or whatever. And he is crazy. So we have a video podcast between us, but it's never published. But behind him, you know, there are lasers and IoT devices. And he's a committer of multiple Apache projects as well. And whatever is with IoT. So it could be interesting, maybe even to.
Yeah, that's for sure. And on that note, you know, because for a long period of time, Java was equivalent with enterprise, and most of the things being web. And then I saw a couple of presentations, I had a couple of discussions for instance, with Johan Jensen. He's working for ASML.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really surprised to see that this giant that in the end has a monopoly in terms of laser cutters for microprocessors, they are using Java for everything that they do internally. And
this is really surprising, because the ASML, this is the most demanded hardware right now, because all the fabs, the manufacturers, the huge, you know, manufacturing's buildings in US built right now for TMC and for Intel, they need the ASML, and the machines are crazy expensive and very precise, and Java runs on them. You're right.
The other one that was quite surprising for me was a conversation with the guys from Picnic. Unfortunately, I missed the name of the director of engineering from there, but he's also hardcore Java guy, Sander Mack. Sorry, Sander.
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh.
I spoke to Sander, and a lot of the robotics behind Picnic are JVM related. Mm-hmm. And that was quite interesting. And it was some decisions where, you know, when you had the choices of whatever, left and right, as you said, go, Rust, whatever. But then you just look into what's actually important to run, and something that is useful. And yeah, and also in our pick and place ecosystem, I was really surprised to see Raspberry Pis. So you have, you know, this complex stuff, and it, at the heart of it, there are Raspberry Pis. So it's a whole different world. And yeah, in Industry 4.0 sounds quite about right.
Yeah, and what are your companies doing right now?
Our particular use case is Legionella. I don't know if it rings a bell or not, but Legionella is a bacteria that is present in all water.
Yeah.
But what happens when you have stale water, this grows to a higher level, and that can be critical for the human body. Mm-hmm. And it's problematic because it flourishes at the around the temperature of the normal temperature of the human body. The part where you take samples and you try it takes too long. And the best thing what you can do is constantly take the temperature of your water around your company or whatever. Homes are not that much, but public spaces. And then you can just know whether there is a risk of Legionella or not. In the UK, it's quite regulated. There are a lot of legislation in place. There are recommendations, so it's not mandatory. But in case something happens, you're liable for huge penalties or even manslaughter from negligence. And pretty much what we have, basically speaking, is just sensors attached to pipework. Mm-hmm. that are reading the temperature in real time. And then rather than sending people all around it with thermometers, we are just giving this kind of information and you have a trend. Uh-huh. And then you can provide corrective measures.
And how long it takes until the bacteria, grows?
Grows. It's quite fast, especially in stale water. The problem occurred in the UK because they used to have big tanks at homes, mm-hmm. where they just kept water for their homes, and that's why it became more and more fast growing. And basically, this is the main scenario that we are looking into. But now we are just looking into scaling horizontally as well. So we have power.
Day, 2 days a week, or how long it takes until it becomes critical?
I think you are looking a couple of days to, uh-huh. to a week.
And what happens if there are too many bacteria in the water? How you get sick or what happens? You know.
It's not through drinking it. It's about inhaling it. So the problem is, you know, the small vapors when you uh-huh. take a shower or stuff like that, or when you're washing your face, you inhale the vapors. And those you get pneumonia. So basically, most of the cases, it just feels like pneumonia, but it's a lot harder and can be fatal for the human body. Okay. It's actually called the Legionnaire's disease because that's the place.
Okay, this is the name now. Okay, interesting. So basically have a sensor reading, right?
Yes. So we have sensors that are attached to battery powered devices that are communicating wirelessly. And this is open for a lot of other topics. So for now, these are the cases that we currently cover. And on top of that, we are looking into other points as well.
So maybe the Christopher is really interesting because he's also committed in IoTDB, for instance. This is the time series database. So he's one of the committers. Apache NiFi, so he does. So his philosophy is actually great because what he says is that in his product, in his commercial bundle or product, he only used projects where he contributes back. He does not like, you know, to steal something, which he would like really actively support the project. And interesting. So, and
Okay. On my list to look into.
Perfect. And interesting. And the project is in the Cluj, the company?
The company is currently we have engineering remotely, mainly in Romania, but we have some people from other places in Europe, like the Netherlands. The company is UK-based. Mm-hmm. But yes, mainly it's spread across Romania in terms of engineering. Cool. Manufacturing is in the UK.
And you're building the hardware as well?
We are trying to. So what we do up to now, we do the hardware, mm-hmm. but we stopped until last year, we stopped at the point where we just designed it. And then we had it outside. Now we have a small pick-in-place line in our office in the UK. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to do that as well. It's taking longer than we expected. But we are trying to keep things European as much as possible.
Well, yeah, perfect.
Considering UK is Europe, even though they are refusing to believe so.
So, perfect. So we cover Java Advent, right?
Yeah.
Thank you a lot. Anything to add? Or?
Well, we are looking forward to having your contribution to the Java Advent. So.
Yeah, we can do this for sure. So this is basically an article, right? About the topic.
Yes. Or we can do a recording. We'll find something.
An article. No, just ping me and we'll do it. So,
Of course.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
September, roughly, right? And maybe see it in Cluj. There's a what was the name of the conference?
Dev Talks, I think.
Dev Talks, exactly. This was a huge Romanian conference. I was stunned how big it was, actually. On a hill with nice view in Cluj.
Yep.
So, it was a nice conference where we met.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you a lot. Where people can find you? You know, your blog, javaadvent.com. This is your blog, official blog.
Yeah, this is the one that the community one that I'm pushing. Nowadays, I am more incognito, so I don't put that many things. But probably InfoQ is the place where you can find more of my work, mainly podcasts. And LinkedIn is the other place where I can be found.
Mm-hmm. And if the Java Advent, maybe it is going to be migrated to Rock, you said, right?
Yes, we are discussing with one of the main contributors of Rock. We said that it would be nice to see a real case study. He was pushing a lot for what Rock actually is. And I said, okay, let's take a challenge, see what it means to migrate from, you can just ignore the next word, WordPress and PHP. Mm-hmm. And to see how we can move it to Java and static.
Who is the guy you talk to with Rock?
Andy Damavin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A friend.
So maybe I will ping him because also interesting in the Rock discussion. And if he's migrated Java Advent, we will have to podcast about that. The migration.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll send you an introduction. I'll send you an email to you and Andy. You can have the conversation there.
Yeah, perfect. And if it's migrated, we will conversation with you, even to promote Java Advent 2026 and Rock, of course.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next time.
See you.